Okay, thank you very much for the introduction. Yes, so this talk will be about some results on how to use UML to develop safety critical systems. Firstly, what is the problem here? We probably all know that the high quality development of safety critical systems is very difficult. And unfortunately, there are quite a few examples where we can see in practice that this is the case, because mistakes are being made, and sometimes with quite spectacular consequences. So a rather well-known example is that of the Ariane rocket in the late 90s, which crashed because of a software problem. And you can wonder why there is a problem, although of course the overall challenges have been known for a couple of decades now, and I think part of the problem is that the correctness of software, in the sense that the software actually does what it's supposed to do, is always in an industrial environment, is always in conflict with the cost of developing software. And this means in particular that despite a lot of successful research in using formal methods for constructing safety critical systems, unfortunately they are perceived as expensive in industry, and in that case they are often not used. And that's really the starting point for this research. So firstly, the idea was to try to consider the development of a safety critical system within the context of model-based development, where you start firstly from requirements, then you you construct models, and you somehow get down to the code. And the point is then that you can verify the models with respect to the safety critical requirements, and secondly, of course, you can also make sure automatically that the code actually implements the model, and that way then also satisfies the safety requirements. And the advantages of this approach are that this way you can consider the safety critical requirements from early on in the development cycle, which, as we know, saves a lot of cost when trying to correct errors. So Böhm, a long time ago, showed that the late correction of errors costs up to 200 times that of the earlier correction. And the second point is, using this kind of model-based approach, you can actually consider the safety requirements in the development context, and this is actually what was the problem in the example of the Ariane rocket, which I mentioned, because there people reused old software with a new rocket, and somehow it didn't work out together. So, the goal in using this model-based approach is to consider the architecture, the environment of the system, together with the software. In this way, firstly be able to analyze the models for safety requirements, and then also to make sure that the implementation actually satisfies these requirements. So more specifically, the goals now in the context of using UML for this purpose are as follows. So firstly, we assume that UML specifications are there for the system, which has to be constructed, or can be constructed rather easily, because many people know UML. Then the idea is that the extension of UML, which I'm explaining in this talk, allows you to include safety requirements and also established solutions, if you like, safety patterns, in the context of the UML specification, in the form of stereotypes, using the extension mechanisms that the UML offers. And this way, the goal is to make this knowledge about how to construct safety-critical systems available to developers who may not have a special training in the area. As a side effect, the advantage would also be that whenever you need documentation, for example, if you want to have your system certified, then you can use the UML specification, of course, also for the documentation. So it's not really so much more effort than in that context to follow this approach. Now, more specifically, more on a technical level, some ideas how to do this, how to reach these goals using UML. The first idea was, or the first observation was, that there are many important safety requirements which you can actually make precise by referring to a precise execution semantics of a simplified fragment of UML. And that you can make them precise in a universal way. So you don't have to do this for every new model which you construct all over again, but you can do it once and for all. And this is what we've been doing when coming up with this extension. Firstly, providing stereotypes, and secondly, providing constraints associated with the stereotypes, which make the requirements that should be expressed by the stereotypes precise by referring to these execution semantics. And the same ideas applies then conversely, not only to the requirements themselves, but the goal here in this context is now to, as I said, to analyze the UML models for safety requirements, and many safety requirements are formulated with respect to a potential impact of the environment, such as hardware failures, and these you can also model in a precise and universal way by referring to the execution semantics, and also associate with the stereotypes, some of the stereotypes that I will explain on the next couple of slides. So that's the overall idea, and then what you can do after you include these stereotypes in the UML model, you can use tool support to evaluate the constraints associated with these stereotypes with respect to this execution semantics. And that way, the developer will then automatically get feedback on possible weaknesses in the specification with respect to the intended safety requirements. And that way you can make sure that on the level of the design of the system, the safety requirements are fulfilled. And as I said already, the next step would then be to generate, for example, generate code or generate test sequences to make sure that also the code satisfies these requirements. So firstly, just a bit of background on safety as far as it is relevant here in what I'm saying in this talk. So firstly, I have to say that, of course, safety is a rather broad area, and here, since I only have a couple of slides, I can only focus on a particular aspect of safety-critical systems. But firstly, some general remarks. Something which is interesting in this kind of context when you try to come up with this kind of extension of UML to construct safety-critical systems is the observation that in the context of safety-critical systems development, you often consider different levels of safety. And one example given there is a certain standard in avionics where you have these five levels, A up to E, but that's just a random example to make the point that this is something which is being used in practice and which usefully one would also incorporate in the context of such an extension. Then secondly, the question is how safety goals are usually expressed in practice, and that's one of the main ways of doing that is via the maximum allowed failure rate that that the system has to satisfy. And the last thing interesting here when trying to come up with this extension, which as I said should have a sound basis for analyzing the safety requirements, is and which is what I'm going to focus on the next couple of slides, that often you need something like a redundancy model to provide levels of safety in spite of, for example, an underlying hardware which may have faults in itself. And of course, that's the area of fault tolerance, and this is what I'm focusing on in this talk specifically in the context of safety critical systems. So, yeah, if you would look at failures now, as I said, the safety requirements, or many of them, are formulated relative to possible failures that may occur. So firstly, if we want to kind of come up with this kind of extension, we have to consider what or how these kind of failures look like, so we can include them in the used execution semantics of this fragment of UML. And here I'm focusing now on failures that may arise at communication links between different components in a system while data is being communicated. And of course, the different things that can happen to data which is in transit between different components are that the data can be delayed and also then possibly reordered. The data may be lost completely, or it may be corrupted in transit. And something else, which at least on the next couple of slides, to simplify the presentation, I will make as an assumption is that the failures occur randomly. And this is an assumption which you can, you can often make, for example, if you consider hardware, but of course not always. And it's also possible to generalize this approach, but not possible in the context of a short talk like this. And that's why I do this assumption here. And then the next thing which we need in order to define this extension together with the underlying analysis foundation is, we have to consider in which ways these failures may occur. And this is also a notion which exists in that context in fault tolerance systems. It's called a failure semantics. And here I'm just considering two examples for that, again, because of time restrictions. So the first one is the so-called crash performance failure semantics. And this means that a component of the system may crash or may exceed the time limits which were set for a certain message to be delivered, but it's supposed to be partially correct in the sense that it never delivers incorrect values. Then a different failure semantics is the value failure semantics, and this then also admits that the components may actually deliver incorrect values. But these are just two different possible scenarios in this context. So now the question is how to incorporate all of this information in an extension of UML for developing safety critical systems. And I assume that you know the standard extension mechanisms such as stereotypes, tags, and constraints. And these are being used now in this context. So firstly, to start out with the failure semantics, which I mentioned on the previous slide, for each failure semantics, we define a stereotype with the same name, such as, crash performance, value, and so on. And then, of course, this is initially this is just syntax, which may look nice and may be useful to some degree to store information and to communicate information, but as I mentioned already, the goal goes further than that. We also want to analyze models, and this means that somehow we need to include the information which is associated with this name, crash performance, to include this into this execution semantics of UML. And this is done in this way. So for each redundancy model, which may be, for example, a voting protocol where you replicate components and then the results of the components will undergo a voting process from which one result is then chosen. And so this is a so-called redundancy model, and here we just, this R is initially just a symbol which will get some meaning in the later definitions. So if we are given such a redundancy model and a stereotype, giving a failure semantics, then we define a precise meaning for the stereotype by giving such a set of possible failures that may happen at a communication link carrying the stereotype and under the assumption that the system uses the redundancy model R. And so these are three different kinds of expressions, and they correspond to the three kinds of failures which I considered on the previous slide. But of course, as we know, in set-theoretical systems, the numbers are really important, and therefore we also need arguments to these kind of failures. And this, in the case of the delay, that's of course the expected maximum time delay. Then in the case of the loss, it's the probability that the value is not delivered within the time delay. So we define a loss to be a delivery after this time bound. And thirdly, corrupt Q, where Q is the probability that the value which is actually delivered on time is in fact corrupted. And in each case, this is supposed to incorporate the redundancy model. So for an example, suppose we consider the redundancy model which uses a controller which is replicated three times, and then the fastest result is chosen. Then one would take the following arguments for these kind of failure scenarios. Firstly, T is the delay of the fastest controller, because that's what's just being taken by the voting process. Then P is the probability that this fastest result is not delivered within the time-bound T. And Q is the probability that this fastest result is then corrupted. And this is again, in each case, with respect to the failure semantics, which is expressed by the stereotype attached to the relevant communication links in a deployment diagram. So this is the part which describes, in a way, the properties of the environment of the system on the physical level within deployment diagrams. Now we would like to also be able to formulate the guarantees which we expect from the system on the logical level, and to be then able to compare the requirements on the physical level with the guarantees on the logical level, whether they are consistent. And this is then done with the second stereotype, the guarantee stereotype. And this sort of is similar to what you can do actually in the real-time UML standard. Namely, you can include the required safety properties in the UML diagram, and specifically in a class diagram where you can specify that a certain data is supposed to deliver a certain goal which is associated with the stereotype guarantee, and which may have the values, again, corresponding to the three kinds of failures which I mentioned earlier. That's either something should be delivered immediately, namely within a certain time bound T, or the eventual delivery should happen with a probability P, and thirdly, again, the probability that the value which is delivered is then in fact correct should have the at least the probability Q. So this really corresponds to what we saw on the earlier slide, what is included on the level of the physical model of the system. And then, of course, one would like to be able to establish that these two kinds of views of the system are consistent, so that the physical layer actually gives us what the logical layer requires. And this, for this, we can use another stereotype, and this we can now attach to subsystems, which may include the on the one hand Well, yeah, the deployment diagram, which includes both the physical and the logical information on the two previous slides. And the constraint associated with this safe link stereotype then just makes sure that for each of these bounds, time or probability bounds, what we require from the system is actually matched by the physical level. And well, an example, just as all of the examples in this talk, a very trivial example, of course, you can, in this example, you can see that, firstly, how the stereotypes are supposed to be used. So you can attach, for example, the crash performance stereotype to this communication link, and also a certain guarantee to the communication dependency, which goes along this this link, and then the safe link stereotype, which is associated to the subsystem containing this diagram, then is supposed to enforce the constraint that the two kinds of information are actually consistent, which means that if this is not the case, if this condition is not fulfilled, then the diagram would carry the stereotype illegitimately, and the tool support associated with this approach would point this out when analyzing the diagram. And yeah, so there, this is one kind of property which allows you to check consistency checks on a on the static view of the system. Then there are other kinds of stereotypes which I can now just hint at. And this is, for example, the safe dependency stereotype. So instead of going through this definition, I will just show this this example. The idea here is that this stereotype is now used, similar to the safe link stereotypes, to now make sure that the safety requirements within a class diagram are consistent. So whatever one object requires from another object with respect to data that is supposed to be exchanged, this is firstly formulated in the class diagram with respect to the different objects, and then the safe dependency stereotype with its associated constraint checks that this is actually consistent. And this you can then again verify using the tool support. But of course, this is just on the syntactic level, and so far maybe not very exciting, because this you could still see with a bare eye if you care to actually look through the whole model. But the more interesting thing maybe is that this approach you can now extend to the behavioral part of the UML model. Firstly, for that, of course, you need the execution semantics, which is precise enough to be coded up into a tool. And this is sort of the sketch how, for a simplified fragment of UML, we've been defining such a semantics, which is then then coded up into a tool. And in particular, at the four steps, this includes the failure model. So this is what the failures can do to the software that is executed on this system. And yeah, so this is probably too much detail to explain in this talk, but the details are given in the paper. So I just wanted to show here that what comes up here is, firstly, of course, we would like to be able to model the possible delay in the communication between components, and this we do by for each link having a sequence of queues which contain the values which will be delayed by a further n time steps, and this is then updated after each iteration of the semantics of the UML model. And secondly, we keep track of a sequence of probability values corresponding to the histories, the execution histories of a given UML specification. And that way, we can then also model the different other things that can happen, namely that firstly, that messages get lost completely, which means they're just mapped to the empty set, this links queue. Or secondly, the the values are corrupted, which is modeled by setting the link queue to a specific symbol, meaning a corrupted value. And then you can record all these probability values and in the end compute the probability that this history with a certain kind of failures will take place when executing the model. And then the next kind of stereotype allows you then to check that the safety requirements which you included in the UML specification as stereotypes are actually met by the execution of the UML model with respect to this semantics, which again includes the time delay and the probability values. And well, I cannot really say much more about that. And yeah, lastly, you can also define stereotypes which allow you to check more specific and possibly very complicated safety requirements, which you can then also verify automatically. And so, yeah, in this example, the point is of this containment stereotype, the goal is that safety critical parts of the system should not be possible that these are corrupted by non-safety critical parts of the system. And this you can actually make precise, this requirement, again by referring to the execution semantics of the UML model. This is then associated with this containment stereotype, and this you can again also verify using the tool support. And here, well, this is just an example which of course is extremely trivial, but it's supposed to point out that here things get more complicated, so that you can not in general verify the safety requirements manually, so you actually need this kind of tool support. And here the idea is just that you have some kind of attribute, namely the fuel consumption attribute, which is of course safety critical, and which is however influenced by the fact whether the wheels are outside or inside the plane, which for some reason were here not assumed to be safety critical in that setting. And you can then analyze the state chart automatically and see that in fact the non-safety critical data has an influence on the safety critical data, which is what is not supposed to be the case. And the same thing you can do for the other kinds of safety checks which you would like to use, for example, you have different kinds of checklists in the literature which all include this kind of checks and which you can also include in the context of this UML extension. And yeah, I think I'm probably getting to the end of my time. So just to point out very quickly, I mentioned tool support a couple of times, and this is what we're working on at the moment in Munich. So the idea is that a developer can use a UML editor which allows him to save the UML model in the XMI standard. Then our tool uses the MDR framework for XMI data binding to be able to access the data via Java methods. And then we firstly have a static checker which does the static checks of the first couple of stereotypes. And then for the dynamic checker of the last couple of stereotypes, we actually need more sophisticated tool support, which we are connecting at the moment in form of the SMB model checker. And the results of the two checks are then merged together or used by this error analyzer, and then the user gets back firstly a text report and secondly a modified UML model where at the respective places where stereotypes are violated, this is pointed out explicitly. So yeah, if you want to have a look at the tool, then I have it with me on the laptop and you can ask me after the talk. And yeah, finally some resources. So firstly, of course, Ralf Gerstner outside told me that I should make as much as possible advertisement for the new book, which is supposed to come out, which is not exactly about safety, by the way, but it's a very parallel approach in the setting of security critical systems. And also, yeah, as I said, it's really rather parallel. But there, you instead of failure models, of course, you have adversary models and so on. Yeah, but anyway, just to mention this. Then there are a couple of more tutorials on this topic, which I'm going to present in the next couple of weeks. And of course, there was the CCUML workshop, for which there are still a couple of proceedings there. And more information you can find on my website, or just ask me after the talk. Okay, thank you much.
What you looked at here is basically checking that you meet the safety requirements in the proposed design. Most accidents actually result from the safety requirements not being correct in the first place, and I was just interested if you had any thoughts on how you validate the safety requirements to check that you're proving the right things, essentially.
Yeah, so one of the goals of this approach in general is to make the gap between the people who think about the requirements and the people who actually implement the thing as small as possible, using this model-based approach. And this is, I think, one of the benefits. And thereby, hopefully, these kind of mistakes which you mentioned are made less unlikely.
Not really a question, just a short remark. While I like your presentation a lot, I would like to kind of warn you that the standard terminology of dependability concerning faults and failures are probably a bit misused. So what you refer to as failure is rather fault.
As I said earlier, the setting of this is not dependable systems, but technical systems, which is similar, but a bit different. And as I said, here I focused on the systems that are safety critical and possibly dependable or maybe not dependable or reliable. So
I think that the terminology is wrong.
Okay, well, we can discuss that offline, but anyway.
Great. I'd like to thank the speaker.